نسيت حالي انتك وهونتيني ونسيتك بعد ولعت ونسيتيني يا سب حالي انتك وهونتيني ونسيتك بعد ولعت ونسيتيني
سب حالي انتك وهونتيني.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And I'm joined by Dr. Abubakar Saad, who is a professor of history at Western Connecticut State University. He is originally from Benghazi, Libya, and worked for the Libyan government prior to Muammar Gaddafi's coup. He stayed a government employee, eventually working for several years as Gaddafi's translators. In the 1970s, he and others plotted to overthrow Gaddafi. Professor Saad fled the country when the plot fell apart. He is now a U.S. citizen. Welcome to Background Briefing, Abubakar Saad.
Thank you very much.
And we were just speaking then with a human rights monitor who's been in Libya for the last several months, and I think she gave a fairly grim picture of what is happening there. Would you like to comment on what she said, Dr. Saad?
Well, she's actually speaking the truth, and she was really presented the situation, in, particularly in Misrata and the Western Mountain, in a very vivid way. The reality it is everywhere where Gaddafi still has control. You know, you could actually apply the picture that she had painted of those areas everywhere else. You know, there are so many towns, say, I give you examples of Zawiya, which is about 50 kilometers to the west of Tripoli, that have risen in March, and they were crushed completely, and atrocities had been committed in that particular town. And after they took control of it, just only 3 weeks ago, the opposition groups and forces regrouped again, and they tried again, and they were crushed again. So that's just one example. And the city of Zuwara, just right next to it, and so forth. There are so many areas that actually the human rights groups and the international media have no access to them.
Well, my understanding is that in the Western Mountains, in and around the town of Bir al-Ghanem, where that's where a lot of the fighting is, because if the rebels break through there, there's an open road into the outskirts of Tripoli.
Well, Bir al-Ghanem controls a major artery that's between the mountain region and Tripoli. So if it's some sort of a hub or a traffic point there, where several roads actually go from there. They you know, one road goes to Nalut, one goes to Ifrin, one goes to to Tripoli. I mean, there are several of them, and one of them goes to Ghrian, which is another major town that's controlled by Gaddafi's forces. So the strategic value of Bir al-Ghanem falls in that particular fact, the fact that it is in a crossroad. Actually, it even controls part of the road that connects Libya to Tunisia, Tripoli to Tunisia. So basically, that's why the Gaddafi forces are trying to prevent them very hard from taking it, and the opposition forces. And by the way, their name now is the National Liberation Army.
Okay. Well, I've always felt uncomfortable referring to them as rebels.
The National Liberation Army is basically trying to. Of course, their goal is not to take Tripoli, but they are trying to besiege Tripoli, as Gaddafi had done to Misrata from all sides. So that's basically the plan of the rebel of the Liberation Army and the
end. Well, but it's not an army. That's the bottom line. That Gaddafi's got a professional army. He's got Belarusian mercenaries.
The Libyan Transitional Council officially announced that. and it is recognized by the international community.
So the French have been dropping arms. The French have been dropping arms to what we'll now call the National Liberation Army. This has upset Russia, but. Apparently, these arms aren't being distributed very well. The people in the Zintan group didn't share them. So, what's happening there? That, to your knowledge, about one, the scope of Western help, which clearly seems to be lacking, given this long stalemate, and two, the extent to which the arms that are being dropped by the French are being shared.
Yeah. Well, the arms that were dropped by the French are basically really light weapons. So far, we don't have any information that it is really heavy weapons that will fully rebel the Gaddafi forces. The strongest of these armies that we've heard so far, that's anti-tank rockets that also were included. Why they will not be shared? Because the headquarters of the fighting forces in the mountain are in Zintan, and you have to remember this is a rebel army that really doesn't have the logistics and the an organization of an organized army. And that's why you would find some of them wanted some weapons without even being trained on it, and the headquarters in Zintan basically contains several former officers of Gaddafi's army, and they are the ones who are saying, well, let us train you first, and then you can take these arms, because these arms are more newer than the ones they had. You have to remember, these guys were fighting with old Russian arms.
Sure. Well, anything they can get their hands on, then that's
exactly.
That is why it's there's been a lot of criticism of NATO, even from the United States Secretary of Defense, saying that they're not exactly stepping up to the plate, even though clearly there are limitations to air power alone. I thought I'm speaking with a former Libyan diplomat and a translator for Gaddafi, Dr. Abubakar Saad. I thought what Sidney Quirum of Human Rights Watch said towards the end there was very interesting. And I'd read some stuff in the New York Times about how a couple of the New York Times reporters shook off their escorts and went around the streets of Tripoli and talked to people. And talked to military conscripts who are in Gaddafi's army, who said basically the rebels own parts of Tripoli during the night, that they get sniped at and kidnapped and killed, and they're scared to death. So that would indicate that there's activity within Gaddafi's city. And she mentioned that too, that would be the key to whether this agony will finally be over.
Exactly. That's basically what the opposition is trying to do, is trying to smuggle some arms into Tripoli itself. And there are certain groups within Tripoli who are carrying some sort of a guerrilla warfare with Gaddafi's forces. But you have to remember, their weapons are very limited. So basically, it is what we would call a hit and run situation. They operate best at night because they don't want it to hurt the other population, and also they don't want to be obvious. They're basically wearing masks and so forth, and then they attack and they flee. So that is geared towards demoralizing Gaddafi's forces, because most people don't know that Gaddafi actually has 19 brigades just in the city of Tripoli. I mean, so any small group of fighters, they stand no chance whatsoever in winning a fight in there. So their best chance is basically the pressure from the outside the city, like from the mountain region and all other areas, like besieging the city and preventing Gaddafi from getting supplies through Tunisia and all of that, and At the same time, these small groups would be a hit-and-run group so that they can actually either demoralize the military or actually encourage other residents of Tripoli to join them. And because right now, Tripoli, you have to remember, it has the largest population in Libya, the largest city in Libya. It has over 750,000. So if you have that 750,000, some of them will start rising up against Gaddafi. Regardless whether he has 19 brigades or not, it is going to have a major effect, and it will encourage others to abandon him. So it's a matter of psychological war, really, at this particular point, because they really don't have these heavy weapons to attack Gaddafi and really destroy him. Even in the east, they don't have those weapons. The Western forces and the allies and the UN, and nobody wants to arm them. So basically, most of the arms they're getting are trickle here from here and trickle from there. And that really is not enough to carry out a final decisive battle with Gaddafi.
So again, Dr. Abu Bakr Saad, who's a former Libyan diplomat and translator for Muammar Gaddafi, another question that I asked our previous guest, the human rights monitor, Sidney Quirum, who's been in Libya for months and is just on the border there with Tunisia. I mentioned to her that the International Criminal Court had just issued an arrest warrant for Gaddafi, and how that might create a kind of paradox here, that on the one hand, it seems clear that NATO's trying to eliminate him with bombs under the idea that they're going after military command and control. But on the other hand, now that there's an international arrest warrant, wouldn't that restrain NATO or tie their hands in terms of, well, they clearly want to get this over with and get rid of this guy. So does that protect Gaddafi, this international arrest warrant, in a paradoxical way?
No, I don't see it that way. I mean, because we are operating from the premise that NATO does not target Gaddafi. But, you know, but the reality is a different story. The reality is they are attacking his command centers. And he could be in any of those command centers at any given moment. So basically, that is not really going to protect him, because they are not really after him to arrest him. NATO is not going to arrest Gaddafi. Unless the people of Tripoli arrest him, or the opposition defeats his forces and they arrest him, really, they don't, because the UN and NATO doesn't have any troops on the ground to do that such an arrest, or to kill him, or anything. So basically, it is, you know, he might be present at any of the targets that they are bombing at a given moment. So I don't see any protection for him from that, because they really don't, you know, they are not really just aiming for him. They just want to destroy and downgrade all of his forces and all of his command centers and supply lines.
Well, I think it was pretty clear from the recent press conference that President Obama, who was asked a lot about the War Powers Act and the legitimacy of this NATO intervention in Libya, and he really did downplay it. And I guess that's the point here, is that mm-hmm. the West is doing the minimum. And he's basically saying, look, we went in there to protect innocent civilians, and we don't have any boots on the ground, and that's the way it is. So what was your takeaway from Obama's answers? Because, I mean, he's almost, the president's almost implying that the Republicans and others who are attacking him are basically trying to, you know, make a big deal out of nothing. I guess
his response that it is politics, I agree with him in his response that it is politics. Because if you recall it, when he announced the United States involvement in Libya, he said, no boots on the ground. I mean, I still remember those words, you know, when he said it. He said, no boots on the ground. So right now, the president is really sticking to that. you know, he's not, and also he scaled down. Remember the first few days of the campaign, the first couple of weeks of the campaign, also the United States was almost carrying it alone. We were carrying out 90% of the operations in the first few days. Now we have scaled back since NATO took over in March. The United States has scaled back. So I agree with them. I don't see what the fuss is all about. They are actually basically they're trying to play politics with it, which is not my place to comment on it. They have their right and he has his right to defend himself.
Well, obviously, Gaddafi were captured or killed, it'd probably be a kind of mini bin Laden moment for Obama, and the criticism would, I imagine, go away. But on the other hand, there's a great deal of concern that this is an indefinite stalemate. Now, I guess the thing that's we've already established that if enough infiltration of Tripoli takes place, then it's possible that could be an uprising. There's already been uprisings there that he has crushed brutally, and that may be what finally does him in. But he's still got some money, and he's still got all of these brigades, and he's still got these Belarusian mercenaries and others on his payroll. How long do you think he can last? And do you think that the arrest warrant would mean that he might, go to Zimbabwe or somewhere like that where they'll take him?
Well, you've heard his statements, all along, and he said he's not going to leave Libya and he's going to die in Libya. The Gaddafi I worked for 9 years is exactly that one, who is not going to go anywhere. I would be surprised if he actually accepts to go to exile.
What about his son, Saif, and the intelligence guy, Sanufi?
I don't know them that well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know his intelligence guy, Abdullah Sanusi, but I don't know his son, Saif. When I left, he was a little kid.
he's a nasty grown man now.
Yeah, exactly.
So who's been paying a lot of American academics off, I might add.
Exactly. So I am not going to, I can't really evaluate Saif al-Islam as much. But both Gaddafi and Abdullah Sanusi, they're not going anywhere because that's the generation that I dealt with. Mm-hmm. And they are not going anywhere.
Well, that means that I guess this agony will continue on. And
I hope. Yeah, and if really the West, NATO and the West and the UN allow the opposition forces to arm themselves, or they at least allow them to arm themselves, maybe they will have the capability of bringing him down sooner. And they have been asking for arms for so long now, and nobody's listening to their pleas.
Except apparently the French, on a small scale.
Well, you have to remember, the French justified it by sending light arms for self-defense.
Russians are having a fit over it. So,
well, the Russians are having a fit because their arms are fighting their Grad missiles and all of the Russian-made equipment, and now Russia are criticizing them because they have lost a very lucrative client.
Sure, By the way, just in closing, my theory about this whole intervention is that it wasn't entirely humanitarian. There was a realpolitik dimension to it.
Exactly.
And that the West and the United States and NATO realized that if Gaddafi were to crush Benghazi and then be back in charge, he would have to be isolated as an international pariah, and the West couldn't do business with him, and the Russians and Chinese would have been in there the next day. So,
exactly.
So one of the reasons they're in there is to make sure that they've got a foot in the door after the war's over so they can continue to get the oil.
We have a final word. We have a saying back in Libya that everybody you know, when you are baking your bread, you know, when you are, you know, making your bread, we have a saying back in Libya and say, everybody brings the fire closer to his bread so it will cook faster. I mean, I'm translating it, but it doesn't come out as really it sounds in Arabic or on the Libyan snack.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Abubakar Saad.
Thank you for having me in.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Abubakar Saad, who was a Libyan diplomat, and he also was a translator for Gaddafi for several years. And in 1970, he and others plotted to overthrow Gaddafi, and Professor Saad fled the country when the plot fell apart, and he's now a U.S. citizen. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about whether Governor Brown's budget is California dreaming.
For a walk on a winter's day, I'd be saving more if I was in LA. California dreaming on such a winter's day.